Episode 872, Movies 2020, Part 2.
Welcome to the Sci-Fi Christian Bring Me Theology at Warp Speed. I'm Anderson. And hi, Ben.
I'm Ben DiMono. I couldn't tell if it was my turn yet.
I know. I have been slowly lowering the music volume while I was talking. Typically, I didn't do it this time, and then you can hear me, and I forgot this time, so sorry about that.
Okay.
Oh, man, next week we'll be in person. We'll have to worry about that.
I know. It's going to be beautiful. I'm very excited. You can even go to a restaurant if you want to next week.
That's true.
It's exciting times here in Minnesota.
So, listeners, last episode ended abruptly. No big deal. Ben and I just, he was giving me the update, of course. I guess I said no big deal because I don't want you to feel like I'm putting you on the spot, Ben. But family.
I understand. I'm not going to go into much detail I did with you, but it was a good thing that I went in and took care of the family.
Yeah,
but everything's okay.
Yeah, exactly. So, so we stopped right at, I think I had just given my number 10. So today, this episode, Movies Part 2, is going to be our top 10 favorite movies of all of our first-time viewings from the year 2020, which I think that's going to be a great episode. So I'll just quickly remind everybody, my number 10 was The Muppets Christmas Carol. Ben, what's your number?
Oh, yes.
What's your number
10? Yeah, and I was criticizing you for your dislike of the music, which I will still criticize you for. But I have a movie beef for you that to take up at the end of this episode.
Okay.
My number 10 is Abel Gance's silent 5.5-hour movie Napoleon. So this is one of cinema's great touchstones, and it's a 5.5-hour epic on the life of Napoleon, and it is quite something to watch.
Wow. Okay. Number 9 for me, it's movie 2 in a trilogy that we both enjoyed. It's For a Few Dollars More from the Dollars trilogy.
I do like that movie. That's a good one. Number 9 for me is a movie called The New Land by Jan Trull. It's a Swedish director. And so this is the first of two, or excuse me, it's the second part of a two-movie series. That's another one kind of like I was talking about Kill Bill. I liked the first movie a lot, too. I like this one a little bit more, and I kind of, but maybe considering them both as a whole here, so this is the standard form. But anyway, it's got Max von Sydow in it. It's a movie about Swedish immigrants coming to Minnesota, and do you know where they go to live?
Okay, let me see. So,
live in Minnesota.
Wait, is it a specific city in Minnesota that I could guess?
Well, I think they mentioned like Taylor's Falls or something
that. Okay.
Or where they're near to, which I know Taylor's Falls is in Wisconsin, but they are in Minnesota. But no, this is just a phenomenal movie. Very beautiful cinematography. Both movies are very long. They're both over 3 hours, but worth the time to watch. It's excellent.
All right. Well, for my number 8. I should say this. For the movies I've listed so far in this favorites of 2020, I think I mostly expected to like them, and I like them maybe even more than I expected. Well, for my number 8, I watched it not expecting to like it, but it was one of those movies I felt like I should probably check out. It's time to watch this movie. So for the first time ever in 2020, I watched Jaws from 1975.
Yeah, we did a whole episode on it.
That's right, and I guess I'm surprised by how much I liked it. Just considering,
you don't like Steven Spielberg, you don't like horror movies, you don't like movies that are made more than 2 hours ago. So all things you don't like, but yet this was a winner.
It was a winner for me. So that's it. Number 8, Jaws, and we did do a whole episode.
Go ahead.
Nope, that's it. I just said we did a whole episode.
We did, indeed. Number 8 for me is a movie I know I talked about, I think, in our top things to watch by 850, The Great Beauty. This is by the director of The New Pope and The Young Pope, and is just a fascinating, very stylistic I would say if you for people who've seen either of those shows, if you didn't like them, you're not going to like this. But a very stylistic kind of aesthetic spiritual journey, and really took me by surprise. I didn't know anything about the director. Paolo Sorrento Sorrentino is his name. Never heard of him before. I heard of The Young Pope, but I didn't know that was the same guy. And just really blew me away. It's a phenomenal movie.
All right. Well, for my number seven, it's going to be the first. Actually, I think you might be interested to know this, Ben. Out of my top 10, I have five that feel a little bit weird to be put on this list because of their quality, but because of what exactly they are. For example, do you remember, I think it was 2 years ago, you put Twin Peaks The Return. I think it was your number one favorite of the year, right?
Uh-huh.
Well, technically, that's a TV show or miniseries. But it is on.
It's an 18-hour movie.
But it was on Letterboxd, so we made it happen. I have on, you know, within my top seven, four miniseries.
Okay.
And this is the first one. Number seven for me is The Last Dance. This is the documentary on the Chicago Bulls and specifically around Michael Jordan.
And we also did an episode on that, and I also saw it and loved it. I did not put any miniseries on mine, you know, for me, not to say that you shouldn't, but Twin Peaks was kind of an extraordinary exception for me. But I love this series. This is fantastic.
Yeah, listeners, if you want to see or hear us talk about it, we did review it, but we reviewed it over on the Patreon feed on Inside the Hoop, our basketball podcast. Okay. So you can check that out, patreon.com/thesci-fi-christian. All right, number seven, Ben.
Number seven for me is a World War II movie called The Bridge, and this is quite the movie. So the plot involves these, I think there's five young German boys, and they want to go join the army. They're all, you know, 14, 15 years old. They wind up being able to sign up. And they get, when they're in their first day of boot camp there, or whatever the German equivalent is, there's sort of an alarm that sounds in their, you know, all the people in their base that they're at are called off to war. And because they're brand new, they're stationed on this bridge that's way out of the way of the fighting, except that it isn't. And so you watch this movie as these five boys who are, you know, begin the movie all gung-ho for go to war and everything, wind up defending this bridge that becomes the center point of this attack. And there's these harrowing moments in the film where they're all alone because various things conspire where their commanding officer is pulled away and everything. So they're all alone here. They're treating it like a joke. And there's a moment in the movie where out of the fog, you hear a truck approaching and it's loaded full of wounded soldiers. And you realize they begin to realize that they are coming from the battle and the battle is approaching them where they should have been well out of the way. They're not. And the second hour of this movie then just becomes this incredibly harrowing, just gut-wrenching experience. It was a profound film. I was deeply impressed by it.
All right. Let's see. For number six, I'm going to be listing my last Universal Monster movie. We've had quite a few on this list. And, you know, working up to Halloween last year, I watched just a ton. I've taken a break since October, but I think I'll try to get back into watching through those old movies. This is from 1935. It's the best monster movie I've seen so far, The Bride of Frankenstein.
That is the best one. It's a winner.
All right, Ben, number six.
Number six for me is another World War II movie, Inglourious Basterds by Quentin Tarantino. This was so good. I just, this movie's so entertaining. It was so funny in places. Brad Pitt is phenomenal in it. Christoph Waltz, who is, I think he plays Blofeld in the most recent James Bond movie, is such a good villain in this. It's just such an evil man, but evil in a way where it's not like, I'm trying to think of a good equivalent, not like they make your skin crawl. It does make your skin crawl, but there's a charisma to him, and he fits perfectly into what a Quentin Tarantino movie villain should be. I absolutely loved Inglourious Basterds.
Hey, let me ask you this. How gory is this movie?
I mean, it's got its places. You've seen Quentin Tarantino before.
Yeah, I'm okay.
So I'd say it's not, I don't know which ones you've seen. You've seen Pulp Fiction, right?
Yep.
So it's probably in line with Pulp Fiction. I think that Hateful Eight is probably his most violent movie, and I would say it's less violent than Hateful Eight, but it's Quentin Tarantino. It's in line with what you would expect. I think you would probably like it, though.
Okay.
I could be wrong. I wouldn't put money on it, but I would say there's a chance, there's a good chance you would like it. I'd put the odds in that favor, but I could be wrong.
All right. Well, my number five is, let me back up a second. As with the monster movies, I also use 2020 to really launch into watching Westerns for the first time. I've seen Westerns here and there, but I watched, I think, about 10 or 11 in 2020. And my favorite of the year is one that you haven't seen yet, but it's on your list for things to watch by episode 950. It's called The Big Country.
Yes, I'm glad you watched so many Westerns this year. I'm very pleased with that.
Yeah, this was a good one. So that's my number five. Ben, what's your number five?
My number five is the second Paul Thomas Anderson movie on this list. I'm trying to remember what the first one was because it's been a while. I had The Master on here earlier. But his most recent film, I think, The Phantom Thread with Daniel Day-Lewis. This is just phenomenal. Daniel Day-Lewis, of course, one of the great actors of all time. And part of what I love about Daniel Day-Lewis is he brings something different to every role he's in. Of course, There Will Be Blood is maybe his most famous role. Also been directed by Paul Thomas Anderson. But in Phantom Thread, he plays a 19th century clothing designer who is completely obsessive, and you get into the relationship between him and this woman and this deeply unhealthy relationship. And Paul Thomas Anderson is such a great director. I mean, I feel like I hate to say he's underrated because he's gotten all sorts of accolades, but I think I'm not fully appreciated him, even though I've been a big fan of some of his movies like Magnolia for years and years and years, but just such a incredible talent. One of the great directors working today. Have you seen Magnolia or any of his movies? There Will Be Blood.
You know, Magnolia. Is that the one with Tom Cruise?
Yes.
Yes. I did see that one. Phantom Thread is on my list for things to watch by 950. So I'll check that out.
Yeah, I think I gave you the digital code before.
Yeah, what else has he done?
He did Punch Drunk Love with Adam Sandler.
That's what I'm interested in seeing, but I haven't watched it yet.
It's very good. Punch Drunk Love is really, really good. He did The Master. He did There Will Be Blood. I don't know if you've seen that one.
No. So, yeah, maybe I should check this director out more.
Which, you know, I know you don't like blood, but despite the title, there's not that much blood in There Will Be Blood.
So it should be called, There Will Be Some Blood.
There Will Be Some Blood. he did Boogie Nights, which I don't think you would enjoy. So he hasn't done tons and tons of movies, but he is phenomenal. Not to be confused, of course, with P.T. Anderson or Paul T. There's another Paul, or Paul W.S. Anderson. Is the director of all those schlock movies. I think he did Resident Evil and all of that. And he is not one of the great directors of all time. So
don't get confused.
Yeah, don't get him confused.
All right.
There's a good Paul Anderson and a bad Paul Anderson.
So diving into my number four, Ben, I'm just going to right off the bat say it's professional wrestling related.
Oh my gosh. Yeah,
so
think about this before it's not too late to change.
Just get this. I'm sure you can imagine that a professional wrestler's lifespan, when it comes to his career, his or her career, you know, typically pretty short, right? I mean, I guess let's just back up. Maybe not super short, but, you know, it's not 30 years. Well, guess what? The Undertaker, one of my favorite wrestlers when I was a kid, just recently retired after a 30-year career. And the WWE Network did a documentary series called The Last Ride. I'm sure it had nothing to do with the fact that there was a documentary about the Chicago Bulls called The Last Dance. and The Last Ride covers The Undertaker's last, I don't know, 3 or so years. So they had been secretly filming him, knowing that he was heading towards retirement, and he kept on trying to plan when his last match will be, and he kept on not feeling like it was the right time. So, yes, The Last Ride, my number 4, only available on WWE Network. Great documentary about one of the best professional wrestlers of all time.
So, 2 questions. Number 1, when you say they were secretly filming him, like,
he was aware. He was aware.
You know, they just hadn't publicized it. Yes, that's a very different documentary.
Yeah, he was aware.
Like, all the shots are just from some hidden camera in the locker room.
That would be good.
Is he in character throughout the documentary?
Well, okay, it's such a good question, because as time has gone on, you know, back in the 70s and 80s, professional wrestlers presented themselves in real life as if they were their characters. And then in the mid to late 90s, Vince McMahon basically came out and said, we're sports entertainment. Essentially, it was his way of saying, we are actors. This is a show. We're not really these characters. But The Undertaker was a guy who, even though we knew this is they're all actors, he tried to stay in character in and out of the ring. So to answer your question now about this documentary, the reason it was being secretly filmed is because of how he tends to stay in character. It doesn't really open up about himself or his real life. So he was in this documentary, you know, over the last 3 years. So it was, I think maybe that's even part of why it was extra cool to see, because you'd never seen this actor really show who he really was.
I like it.
All right, you're number 4.
My number 4 is a Romanian movie called The Death of Mr. Lazarescu. So this is one that's on the Sight and Sound Top 250 list, and I watched it this year due to that. But really just a mix of very intense drama and dark, dark comedy. So it follows an old man who's living alone in his apartment, and it's really almost, it's not in real time, but it takes place over the course of a single night. And it follows him from going over to his neighbor and announcing, you know, complaining that he's feeling sick, and they wind up calling an ambulance, and then it winds up that he needs to have this surgery, and you follow him in his journey through the ambulances. He shows up at a hospital and they're not able to treat him, and he gets transferred somewhere else, and you just follow this journey from, I have a pain in my back or whatever it is. I don't remember the specifics. I think it's his stomach, actually. And it goes on as it develops into something where by the end of the movie, we're not sure he's going to actually die. And despite the title, it's not 100% conclusive whether he does or not. But really just, you know, goes from this kind of dark comedy at the beginning, and there's comedic aspects throughout to being a pretty intense drama about somebody's potentially final moments in life, and it's really well done.
All right. Well,
but I'm sure The Undertaker was good too.
Yeah, it was. Ben, you're not a big fan of musicals. I know this. My number 3 is one of my favorite musicals I've ever seen. And I think it's my favorite 2020 movie release. And I say that because my next 2 items on my list are both miniseries. So for me, number 3, I think the best movie I saw of the year, Hamilton on Disney Plus.
Oh, so not Cats.
Not Cats. No, Hamilton. Yeah, it's crazy. Okay. In 1 year, I saw the worst musical I've ever seen and the best musical I've ever seen.
Yeah, now, I would like to watch Hamilton.
Actually, Hamilton, I don't know if Hamilton is actually the best musical, but it's the best musical of the year for me. I think my favorite musical is Les Mis.
Yeah, Les Mis is a winner too.
So
I don't hate musicals, but I really have to be in the right mood for them. But I would like to see Hamilton.
Good. Yeah, I think you'll like it. All right, Ben, number 3 for you.
Number 3 is a movie that you did not enjoy, but I think acknowledged at least its high quality, and we covered it on the show, Uncut Gems. Uncut Gems. Yeah,
I give it a 3, right? I mean, that's not bad.
You did, but to me, this is an easy 5. I understood why you didn't like it. It is basically somebody found a way to film stress for 2 hours. It's watching an anxiety trip. But holy crap, Adam Sandler is so good in this movie. And to go back to Paul Thomas Anderson, he's great in Punch Drunk Love too. But you know, that's almost 20 years ago now, and he's made a lot of dumb crap in between now and then. And it's always amazing. I love when an actor like that is cast kind of against type, similar to when Jim Carrey did Eternal Sunshine, and you realize, wow, this guy can actually act. Adam Sandler is so good in this movie. And to me, one of the things I really appreciate is a tightly constructed movie where it feels like, yes, there's a lot of things happening, but everything's knit together so carefully and so perfectly. I feel like Back to the Future is a movie like that, the first one. I feel like Back to the Future has that quality of just there's a lot of different pieces going on, but part of the enjoyment of rewatching that movie is seeing just how tightly constructed it is, which, by the way, is the reason I don't like the second one as much. I feel like the second one sort of has a quality of entertaining as long as you don't think about it too much. First Back to the Future movie is the exact opposite. It's entertaining the more you think about it, and so is Uncut Gems. It has that quality of just a well-constructed masterpiece.
Wow. I mean, I did enjoy the movie to a certain extent, not as much as you, but yeah, I think that was a good review. So, all right, where are we at? Number two for me.
I knew I'd sell you with the Back to the Future comparison.
Yeah, why not? Number two. Man, there are two TV miniseries that I just loved this year. It was hard to choose between these two. Who should be number one? Who should be number two?
And so, I honestly have no idea what you're going to say here, because I can't think of, I'll probably know it when you say it, but I can't think of anything that we've watched or you've watched that I'm aware of. So yeah. I'm excited.
So for today, I have these placed as number one and two, but who knows? In a different day, I may flip them. But for now, number two, my second favorite thing of the year, Watchmen.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
I had just watched it. 5 stars. You know, I don't think I ever really mentioned where my 5 stars started. I gave Jaws a 4.5, and then everything from Last Dance and throughout has been 5 stars. So Watchmen, man, another Damon Lindelof masterpiece. Just when you think it can't get better than Lost, he gives us Leftovers. And just when you think it can't get better than Leftovers, he gives us Watchmen. Although that's a little bit of a joke to me, because I'd probably rank them as my favorites in the reverse order. Lost, number one, Leftovers, two, and Watchmen, number three. Although I love them all.
Yeah, Leftovers, I think, is better than Watchmen, which isn't to take anything away from Watchmen, but Leftovers is really something special.
Now, this one is noteworthy because although Damon Lindelof is done with the show and it's on Letterboxd because it's seemingly canceled, HBO could technically bring this back whenever they want. And at that point, I kind of feel like if it has a season two, they should probably take this off of Letterboxd, because it wouldn't really be a miniseries anymore. It would just be a regular TV show.
Yeah, I agree.
So
hang on, I have to reply to something quick here.
No problem. So I guess while you're doing that email, I'll just say I was a little bit torn on if I should include what are TV shows, even if they are miniseries, because this is a movie list. In the past, we've said if it's on Letterboxd, we'll let pass. But if you look at my top 10, 5 are a little bit weird. This is what I was talking about. 4 TV shows, and even Hamilton, it is a movie. It is a multi-camera angled movie, but it's a filming of a live stage production. So
I feel like you're trying to convince us that your list is okay.
No.
And let me just say, on behalf of all the listeners, your list is okay.
No, I guess.
And for listeners who don't agree, shut up.
No, I'm not trying to convince you. I was trying to kill time while you're emailing somebody for work. But I will say.
No, I just have to type stuff. I'm done.
But I guess I was just saying, I was personally torn. But in the end, I just went with what my heart told me, which is let's put my actual favorites on this list.
All right. My number two is a movie that we've both seen but never have discussed on the show. I think you watched it a year or two ago, and I watched it just a few weeks ago. It's Richard Linklater's Boyhood.
Yes.
So for people who aren't familiar with this movie, this is, and most people I assume are, it's a really impressive film. Filmed over 12 years, so they would film for a few days every year, and so you see the actors age as the film goes on. And of course, the main actor is, I think, 6 years old in the first section and 18 in the last section. So it's impressive with that. I mean, if it was just that, it would be a gimmick, but it's two other things, really. Number one, it's a great story, and you get invested in these characters. You get very involved with seeing them grow and change and all of that. But for me, what really, really elevated it, and I think this is true of a lot of Richard Linklater's stuff, is how personal it felt. You know, for me, I have kids now between the ages of 3 weeks and 12 years. And like, I just, as I watch this movie and you see these characters growing older, and it's going so quickly. And it's like, yes, it's going quickly because it's a 3-hour movie, but life goes quickly too. And I felt so emotionally connected to watching that journey because it's the same journey that I'm watching every single day with my kids. And it really moved me on a profound level. I think that in terms of Richard Linklater's other stuff, you know, you have something like Dazed and Confused, which I enjoy but haven't connected to in the same way. And I think it's because I don't entirely relate to that sort of experience that movie takes place. But on the other hand, you have stuff like the Before trilogy of falling in love and then the difficulties of relationships and marriage. And that also is something I've really connected with. And I think Richard Linklater, I don't want to take anything away from his characters or storytelling, both of which are phenomenal, but I think his movies really create a space for you to feel that intense emotion of what he's portraying. And they allow you to enter into that in a really profound way that I don't think many filmmakers manage to capture. And Boyhood is probably my favorite movie of his. I was so deeply moved by this film.
You know, I watched it last year, actually just over a year ago. Also loved it. 4 stars for me. I just checked out my review really quick. I wrote in there that I wouldn't say that this is going to become a favorite movie of mine, but when it ended, I felt like I had experienced something special. And I agree with what you're saying, that life does go so fast. And when you have kids, you're watching them, and it's like, my oldest is 6 already, and I feel like, in some ways, it feels like she was just born.
Right.
I think this movie helps shine a light on how quickly life is moving.
And I'd be willing to bet that, you know, as your kids grow up more, if you, let's say you revisit this movie in 3-4 years, I think you'll feel it even more profoundly from that angle. Once you start to get into the point where it's like they're getting to be 10 and 12, so I have a 10-year-old and 12-year-old, and they're starting to really become young adults, and it's like all of a sudden the end is in sight. It's like we're closer to the end of this than the beginning of this in terms of their childhood. It really, there's really something there that is captured in this movie that is awesome.
Yeah, it's actually, as you're talking, I just kind of feeling like I'm sort of dreading for them to. I mean, I like having my little kids, and I.
Yeah, no, I mean, but that's part of the conflict that I think this movie brings out is that, like, as you see the main character, I forget his name, but you see the main character as he's goes from the childhood innocence to the conflicts of adulthood, and you see him make mistakes, and you see him have to overcome them and learn to work hard. And it's like you get that sense through the characters of both the joy and the tragedy of watching your children grow up.
So I know we've been talking about this in a special way. Do you mind if I just put a quick joke in here at the end?
No.
I wrote in my review, and I think this is a great theory, although obviously we don't know if this is true. I have a unsubstantiated theory that the creators of this movie have continued filming the lead actors, and that we're actually heading towards a sequel called Manhood.
I read your review, and I didn't see that as a joke. I know, I guess it kind of is, but I would love that if that's true. We do know that Richard Linklater, I don't remember if you, we covered this in news about a year ago or so, but there's some Andrew Lloyd Webber musical that takes place over 20 years, and he's filming that in the same way.
Wow. All right, Ben, should we head towards the number one?
Number one.
Number one for me. My favorite TV show of the year, I guess, and also my favorite thing that made this list, since it's technically a miniseries. I'm talking about Devs.
Oh yeah, Devs was phenomenal.
Yes.
I love Devs. I mean,
we had a whole episode about Devs, but man, when this thing, I mean, right from the start, you're captivated by the mystery, but it's not a show about mystery. It keeps uncovering things, and then there's more, and there's more, and when it ends, I was left there thinking, man, this is one of the best TV series I've ever watched.
I agree. And for the record, although I love both series for year one and two,
yeah,
you do have in the correct order, in my opinion.
So you do think Devs number one, Watchmen number two?
Yeah, it's not even close in my mind. And again, I love Watchmen, but Devs is something special on a whole different level.
Yeah, and so the cast overall is good. Nick Offerman, though, is a star of when it comes to his performance.
Yeah, and especially, I think, talking about, like, with Adam Sandler being cast against type, and I don't mean to compare Nick Offerman's output, comedic output, to what Adam Sandler typically puts out, but again, there's some of that pleasure of, most of us, of course, most familiar with Nick Offerman from Parks and Rec, and then seeing him in the very different role, and not comedic at all. He did a great job.
All right, Ben, I'm ready. What is your number one of the year?
My number one is a movie we covered at the very beginning of the year, Parasite.
Oh, yeah.
I think Parasite is, I'm not going to gush about it in such an emotional way as Boyhood. Boyhood, I mean, if this was a list of what did I emotionally connect with the most, Boyhood would be number one. But Parasite it deserved its Best Picture winner. It's a modern classic. It's a movie. I haven't watched it again since we reviewed it, but watched it two nights in a row when I first saw it before we recorded. And everything we talked about in that it's just such a tightly constructed movie, and the way the visual storytelling and the power of vertical space in that movie and the way that ties into the themes. And then you get into the comedy and the tension and it's really a home run. I mean, movies like Parasite don't come along very often where you can kind of go down the list of everything you might want in a movie and just checking every single box, from, you know, the humor, the tension, the action, the strong themes, the good visual storytelling. It's an incredible movie. I think if people haven't watched it yet, especially if you haven't watched it because of the barrier of subtitles, I know subtitles can be tough for some people. Just give it a chance. It's that good.
I think you recently mentioned that I wasn't a big fan of this movie, but I gave this 4.5 stars.
Yeah. Yeah, but I can tell you're 4.5 stars when you really mean it and when you don't.
I understand. Well, Ben, there's the list. Listeners,
those are the list.
I don't think we mentioned this in the show, but we were just recording two nights ago. So thanks for making some time, Ben, to come back around and wrap this thing up.
I'm glad we did. So I want you to hit the music, and then I have a post-credits movie beat that I need to raise with you.
All right, you got it. Well, listeners, thanks for joining us here for our Movies 2020 reviews. I'm Matt Anderson.
I'm Ben DiBono.
And we are the Sci-Fi Christians, signing off.
Goodbye.
Well, Ben, the music's not over yet.
Before I get my beef, I should say on my list, I realized as we were going through this, and I think I mentioned this briefly last episode, that I, for whatever reason, forgot to put Hateful Eight on here. And so I'm going to revise my list, and Hateful Eight will probably go somewhere around 11 or 12.
Okay, so you said you
will get dropped off.
You have something to complain about? That's unusual.
I do have something to complain about. So, you know, it's not infrequent that I read your reviews and disagree with them. And I'm usually not shy about telling you. And sometimes it's a honest difference of opinion. And sometimes I feel deeply ashamed. But I think that I've never disagreed with you more than when I read your review of Batman and Robin.
Okay, well, I think you're jumping the gun because
Give this movie 2 stars. And that is scandalous.
You're jumping the gun because this is a movie we're covering in an upcoming episode. I had to watch it for my things to rewatch by 8:75.
Okay, but I just need you to know The fact that you gave this movie 2 stars is scandalous.
All right, well, let's just talk it out here, and we can refer people back.
It's the worst movie ever made.
I was with you, but I think something I've really learned over my life, especially related to the media that I consume, is my expectations change things so much for me. And maybe that ties into the hype that you've been bringing up lately, but I went into... So this is only the second time I watched Batman and Robin. I'd watch it maybe, let's just say, about 10 years ago, but probably not quite. 8, 9 years ago, I can't remember. I went in there thinking, all right, I know people don't like this movie, but I like Batman. I bet I'll like this more than the average person. And then I just hated it. I just hated it. 1 star. That was...
Half a star.
That was maybe half a star. I don't even remember. All right, well, so going into this viewing, I put it on my list to rewatch. I just wanted to see, where am I at 10 years later? I still didn't like it, but I knew what to expect. And also, I had just recently, in the last few years, I just recently watched all of the Batman 1966 TV show. And guess what? Maybe you didn't realize it. I didn't realize it the first time I saw it. They're playing right into that.
I know, but they're doing it badly.
Yeah, it's worse. And it's also like way too late. Like, it was fun in the 60s, but it's not as good in the 90s. But if you think of it as sort of a version, like if you change your perception and now it's an action comedy and they are kind of making fun of themselves like Batman 1966 does, then it's not as bad. That's all I said. I'm not saying it's good. It's just not as bad. So I bumped it up to a 2. Maybe it should have been 1.5, but I gave it a 2.
Scandalous. It's worse than Cats.
You know, start, it's a joke. It's totally it's not worse than Cats. It's definitely not.
And by the way, speaking of expectations, prediction here on the show, 10 to 15 years from now, you're going to rewatch Cats and give it 2 stars because your expectations will be so low.
Maybe. Who knows? So
I will say two things about Batman and Robin. You know, Joel Schumacher's dead now, but he and George Clooney have spent the last 25 years apologizing for this movie.
Oh, yeah.
George Clooney keeps a picture of himself as Batman in his office to keep himself humble about the roles that he chooses.
That is awesome.
But the other thing, you know, this is this is the final movie in the Governor's trilogy, which are the movies where both Arnold and Jesse Ventura are in them together.
Yeah, well, and that's actually another reason I needed to rewatch it, because I made a Governor's trilogy watch list on Letterboxd, and so I'm slowly completing that.
I think Running Man's the third one.
Well, so I watched Running Man earlier this year. Last year, and then I watched Batman and Robin today, and so I have to rewatch Predator.
Didn't we just watch Predator a year ago or so?
You did. I didn't watch it with you.
Okay. Yeah. So terrible movie. It is an affront to good taste.
It's terrible. I agree. It's just not as bad as I remembered.
I wish I could say that I agree to disagree, but I could never do that when it comes to Batman and Robin.
All right, listeners. Well, that's all from me.
I disagree to disagree.
All right. I think we have some time. You want to jump in and go do a Dune episode?
Well, I'm thinking, because we only have 15 minutes, instead of Dune, why don't we do the Inside the Punt or whatever.
We're Inside the Punt. All right, listeners. So we're going to end this episode. Thanks for joining us here for part 2. If you want to go over to the Patreon feed, we're about to do Inside the Punt. So long, folks.
Goodbye.